Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Public Safety Commission. Roll call. Commissioner Blair.
Here.
Commissioner Stodgill.
Here.
Commissioner Wainwright.
Here.
And I'm Chairman Mock. A quorum of the Public Safety Commission is present, and the public meeting of the commission is called to order and will now proceed. The time is 9:03 in the morning. The location of the meeting is the Criminal Law Enforcement Auditorium at 6100 Guadalupe, as posted in the agenda. We will now consider the agenda items that have been posted for this meeting. We'll begin with Chaplain Furman Carpenter with the invocation. Please rise.
Let's pray. Our holy and most wonderful Father, thank you for another day that we can have to serve you. Thank you, Father, for our country. Thank you for our great state, our governor, our legislators, our commissioners, our colonel, for every member of the Department of Public Safety, Father, and especially those who wear the badge, Father, and sometimes that badge just gets too hard to carry, but thank you for them. A special blessing, Father, we ask you to be with the family of Trooper Walker. You know they're struggling, and Father, please be with them. Please be with Trooper Tovar and Trooper Wallace, Father. The last couple of months has been a very difficult time for these families. It's been a very difficult time for our state and our country. Father, we ask you to please be with us as we move forward. While other countries may think we have lost our mind, please help us, Father, to remember that you are God. And you are the God of love and care, and we are blessed with a good state, Father, that loves our men and women in uniform. Please continue to be with them, and please give them, Father, the wisdom and the knowledge and the safety to bring them home every day, Father. Thank you, Father, for our commissioners here. Please watch over them, and thank you for their good thoughts and their love for our country and for our state. Thank you for our colonel and his command staff and all the men and women of the Department of Public Safety. Please continue to bless them, Father, and as we move forward in public safety and protection and courtesy, Father, in all that they do. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you. Before we go to the pledges, I would ask everybody to observe a moment of silence in memory of Trooper Chad Walker. The pledges will now be given by Trooper Brandon Zealous.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Under the Texas flag, I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
Thank you. Please be seated. Next item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes for the Public Safety Commission meeting that was held on February the 11th, 2021, and the discharge hearing that was held on March 9th, 2021. Do I have a motion?
So moved, Chairman.
We have a motion from Commissioner Wainwright and a second from Commissioner Blair to approve the minutes of the Public Safety Commission on February 11th, 2021, and the discharge hearing on March 9th, 2021. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Director, I'll turn it over to you for the presentations.
Thank you,
The following employees will be presented certificates in recognition of their 40 years of service and accomplishment with the Texas Department of Public Safety. Jose Corral with the Texas Highway Patrol Division. Thank you. Linda Hines with the Driver License Division. Larry Hinojosa with the Texas Highway Patrol Division. Our final service award recipient is Terry Sigmund with Information Technology Division. Former Governor William P. Clements was known for a commitment to excellence in government. The William P. Clements Excellence Award was created to honor employees who display exceptional performance of duties throughout the course of his or her career at DPS. This employee began his career with the Department of Public Safety in 2017. As a strategic planner in Homeland Security Operations, his outstanding leadership in the Bomb-Making Materials Awareness Program has led to the program's significant growth and improvements. By providing guidance to partner agencies regarding the development of the Complex Coordinated Terrorist Attack Toolkit, he has played an essential role in developing resources that will be utilized across the state in preparation for a terrorist attack. He plans, coordinates, and oversees workshops for airport security personnel throughout the state, works in conjunction with councils of government to assess their preparedness and plan for implementation of the state's Homeland Security Strategic Plan, to which he was an essential contributor. His forward thinking and identification of potential threats caused him to reach out to the Department of Health and Human Services in 2019 to discuss public health and medical supply chain issues after identifying potential shortfalls. Upon the onset of the 2020 pandemic, many of his concerns were validated, and he has worked diligently to rectify these issues. He is a regular contributor to the Intelligence and Counterterrorism Division's intelligence updates and provides valuable information regarding significant national and international incidents and emerging threats. A team player that performs beyond expectations without seeking credit or recognition. His dedication and commitment are exemplary and worthy of commendation. In recognition of his exceptional performance of duties throughout the course of his career, strategic planner Brandon Gentry is hereby awarded the 2020 William P. Clements Award.
All right, ready, one.
This employee began his career with the Department of Public Safety in 1997 as a Highway Patrol Trooper before promoting in 2002 into the Criminal Investigations Division. Since that time, his career has been focused on dismantling large-scale criminal enterprises and drug trafficking organizations with direct ties to Mexican drug cartels. He has served as a lead case agent for several major investigations, and due to his knowledge, experience, and leadership, his investigations have resulted in the seizure of more than $5 million in U.S. currency and property, as well as 200 kilos of cocaine, 100 kilos of methamphetamine, 20 kilos of heroin, as well as multiple vehicles. These investigations may have also resulted in more than 160 federal indictments and the arrest of 140 defendants. Throughout his career with the department, he has demonstrated the highest levels of professionalism, initiative, teamwork, and dedication, both on and off duty. His dedication and teamwork is not only reflected by his character within professional duties, but also in his personal life as an active missions volunteer. He is a dedicated community member and has made several mission trips to Canada, Vietnam, and France in service to others. In recognition of his exceptional performance of duties throughout the course of his career, Special Agent Chad Poling is hereby awarded the 2020 William P. Clements Award. On May 4th, 2020, Trooper Jonathan Macias was dispatched to a crash involving a truck tractor semi-trailer and a pickup truck pulling a utility trailer. Dispatchers advised that the driver of the pickup truck was entrapped against a tree and losing a large amount of blood. As Trooper Macias arrived on the scene, he entered the pickup truck from the passenger side and observed two bystanders attempting to calm the driver, who was in a state of shock. Macias noticed a large amount of blood on the driver's side floorboard, airbags, and roof of the vehicle. He immediately retrieved his tourniquet, ran around the back of the truck, and advised the bystanders he was going to apply the tourniquet and would need assistance due to the position of the driver and the severity of the injuries. Not wanting to move or adjust the driver's leg in order to prevent further injury, Macias requested assistance from a firefighter on the scene, and together they were able to successfully apply the tourniquet. The driver was airlifted to a hospital for additional medical attention. In recognition of his decisive and professional response to a life-threatening situation resulting in the saving of a life, Trooper Jonathan Macias is hereby awarded the Life Saving Award.
All right, thank you, Director. Always a wonderful time in our meetings, these celebrations and recognition of outstanding service to the department and the state of Texas, so we appreciate that. We'll now move on to public comment. Sophie, do we have any public comment? Is there anyone in the room wishing to give public comment? Public comment is now closed. We'll move on to item 7 on the agenda, which is the director's report. Director McCraw.
Yes, sir. I'd like to begin. Part of the director's report is an update. It says case update. It's really Operation Lone Star. It's an initiative that was launched by the governor in March to intensify patrol combined operations, which patrol investigative and tactical operations, air and land, and certainly marine, in the hot spots along the Texas-Mexico border. And here to present that and provide you an update is our regional director, who serves as our incident commander for the state of Texas, Victor Escalon. Director? And his trusted intelligence analyst.
So good morning, Chairman, Commissioners, Colonel. How are you all doing?
Good morning.
Also, before I get started, I want to introduce Victor Zuniga. He's the Regional Intelligence Manager for South Texas, and he is very crucial in what we do every day in all of this. He is the information he provides. The intel he provides is critical on what's going on with OLS, but not just OLS, but also throughout the region, throughout the area. So he's very critical and keeps a very good pulse on what we're doing. So thank you.
Okay.
Operation Lone Star. So Operation Lone Star is an initiative and a directive, like the Colonel was saying, that Governor Abbott directed DPS to initiate on March 4th of this year. So DPS South Texas region. The DPS South Texas region consists of 27 counties. As you can see, the areas that we're focused on are two counties in Rio Grande Valley. The county of Hidalgo, the county of Starr. And then also, as you go further up north, we're looking at Del Rio, is another sector that we're looking and have a focus on. But those areas of interest are going to be Del Rio, Quemado, down to Maverick County. Those are going to be the cities that are along the river, and then we're pushing out east towards 35, towards San Antonio, the arteries that are going away from the river. But in Hidalgo County and in Rio Grande City, we're focusing on about 60 miles of river there, from Salineño to La Jolla, Sullivan City area. That's about 60 miles of river that we're placing special emphasis. So here we drill it down a little bit of the areas of interest. Again, Rio Grande Valley down in South Texas, we're highlighting the areas. It's about 60 miles of river where we have a focused, intentional deployment of troopers, SOG, aircraft, TMU, CID. Every division in the department has a focused interest in that area. We want to make it very difficult for the criminals to operate in that area. That area was identified through our partners, U.S. Border Patrol, our local partners, the local politicians in the area. That has shown a history of smuggling of narcotics and people, probably more so than anywhere else in the state of Texas and the U.S. Second to that is Del Rio. Like I said earlier, to drill it down, is Valverde County, Del Rio, Quemado, has parts of Kenny County, into Maverick County, Eagle Pass, then we push out. So the problems of an unsecured border. On the other side, we have several communities or several cities. In the Del Rio, you have Acuña, Pedras Negras. In Rio Grande City, you have Miguel Alemán. You have Camargo, into Reynosa. Those areas, especially Miguel Alemán and Camargo, have shown a lot of violence in the past years of the killing, the culture. Life is cheap on that side, and we just don't want any of that to come over here. By us working in those areas, by having a significant presence, a command presence of the area, how do you capture that? But the criminals see that every day when we're out there day in, day out, working those areas. And the criminals, like, it's making it difficult for them, but the community, they feel safer doing that. I'm going to give you some examples of what I just said. So this right here, in January of 2021, you have 19 people that were killed. Three of those were cartel members. The other 16 were migrants from Central America. So the people that killed them were police officers from Mexico. No doubt in my mind that they're working with a rival cartel. So they get into it, they kill the cartel members, and they kill 16 unarmed people. So that's an example of just ruthless corruption. 20 miles from Rio Grande City, this occurred 20 miles from Rio Grande City in the areas we're operating. This happened Friday, this past Friday and Saturday. This is in the, about 20 miles north of, south of Camargo, 20 miles from Rio Grande City. You have the cartel de Noreste, also used to be known as Los Zetas, fighting with the Gulf Cartel. They're in the Gulf Cartel area. They killed 8 men. The Gulf Cartel had 8 armored vehicles. They were all burnt. But it's occurring just right across the river from Rio Grande City. You know, and if not, you know, this past weekend, troopers reported seeing tracer rounds in Miguel Alemán, but fighting amongst the criminals in that area. So it's happening right next door with our presence. We're going to keep that away. They're going to understand. Tactics utilized by cartels. Pursuits, they're going to be going over 100 miles an hour. The drivers that are smuggling people, that are smuggling narcotics, they're going to be going over 100 miles an hour. They are very selfish. They don't care about people in the immediate area. Total disregard. Bailouts. They're going over 100 miles an hour. All of a sudden, they bail their vehicle to the side, to the bar ditch. They leave doors open. The car is running. It's in drive. Now the trooper or the deputy or the police officer have to contend with that vehicle. Contend with that vehicle that doesn't go into oncoming traffic. Once you make that vehicle secure, you go after the smuggling, the driver. They create confusion for us. Splashdowns. What that is right there, you have a smuggler. Bear with me for a second. Splashdowns. You have a smuggler cross narcotics or people across the river, normally it's narcotics, cross the river into the U.S. But before you know it, they're already driving in the public streets. It takes 3 to 5 minutes. They're already blended in. But we come across them. A DPS trooper comes across them. A lot of times, what they do, they'll U-turn and head back to the river, dump the vehicle, and get back into Mexico. And a lot of times, this is being communicated. The driver's on the phone, is on the radio. He's communicating with members that are in the ground, placed all the way to the river. It's tactical. It's strategic. They have perfected this. They've been doing this for some time. And then, of course, scouting. Scouting, you have a 95-year-old lady sitting in a front porch to a 10-year-old child. Anybody who has a phone, anybody who has a radio is communicating. If they're tied in, they're employed with the smugglers, they're eyes and ears for the smugglers. They can be at the supermarket. It doesn't matter. They're letting the cartel know where all the black and whites are at, where all the border patrol units are at. So very, very, network is very in place.
Major, may I ask you a question at this point? You mentioned the severe violence, the murder, the killing, the senselessness going on across the border. And what you've described is a barrier that we've created on that border in these key areas on the south border, along with our partners, joint venturers, to keep that violence from crossing the river into Texas. If we weren't there, would that violence slip over into our state, the violence that you talked about earlier?
I think the opportunity is there for the cartel to exploit that. So we have to maintain a presence all the time. So even when we're not doing an operation, we have a steady state operation. And in the recent years, we've had a upgraded in pursuits of troopers in that area. So we gotta have that presence. If we don't have that presence, we offer that opportunity for them to exploit that.
And our presence there, along with our partners, is a huge deterrent to the cartels from crossing over.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay. So the key word is there is us, and we maintain a good partnership with our partners, the Sheriff's Department, Border Patrol. We got to maintain that. Yes, sir. So on this slide, I'm showing the DPS pursuits, the trooper pursuits. They show, this is for the Rio Grande Valley. This is for the area we're currently operating in. We show January, February, and March. You know, lighter, light, and then mid-level, then, of course, darker, the darker orange or red in March. As you can see, when we kicked off that operation, the pursuits picked up dramatically. We have several pursuits that are occurring because of the operation, and about 99% of those pursuits are because of smugglers or migrants. So on March 12th, we moved over to Del Rio. And January, I'm counting 3, 4, 5, 6 pursuits that were occurring in that area. February, and then the operation is in full effect. You see all the pursuits that are occurring. Drivers coming in from the big cities to pick up people in Del Rio, and one more. So Del Rio had a 571% increase in vehicle pursuits from January to March, from 2021, from 7 to 47. So as you can see in March, in the RGV, the Rio Grande City area, the area we are focused in on, you have 38 pursuits and 47 pursuits in Del Rio. What's interesting is Del Rio is not as populated as the Rio Grande Valley. And it's more rural, small town, spread out. Vehicle incursions. We're seeing this specifically in Cameron County towards Brownsville, Texas. Basically, they're getting a trailer, flatbed trailer. They put a 55-gallon drum on it, and they float that vehicle across from Mexico to the U.S. side. Very effective, very efficient. Once you hit the U.S. side, it's up and running into the communities. That picture in the middle, it got stuck. They were trying to get it back to Mexico. It got stuck and we're able to capture it. That happened about a week and a half ago. Pursuit and narcotic seizure. This is just a video to showcase what a pursuit looks like there in La Jolla in RGC.
83, because he waited for y'all to get there.
Marijuana.
And then he, all right, watch him. He's slowing down. Yep, it's loaded.
Oh. I wonder if anybody got off over there.
I didn't see anybody get off over there.
Is it crashing bell out in Dallas County?
Like it turns south on veterans.
And 1050 veterans and university. 1050 veterans and university. Subject is out. He's running south from university.
1054, so 6589.
I'm coming up to 107.
Hey, we got
two shots from the other most peaceful trip for that driver right there. 3-4 is
back. Check where I identify.
3-12-800.
I'm not in clear.
This next one right here, it's going to showcase a pursuit. And they splashed out. In what I was explaining earlier, it breaks it down from pursuit, going back to the river, how they're communicating with the scouts to avoid apprehension and avoid seizure of the narcotics. This happened now, going on 3 weeks now in Rio Grande City.
Vehicle is driving in the center lane, speeds 85 miles per hour, moving around traffic. Okay, vehicle just rolled a standby. We're gonna go southbound, undescribed roadway. One occupant, well, correction, one driver. Got a flat tire.
He's got a flat tire, he's gonna continue southbound here. 13, Coronado, Sarino. Charles, we're just at Westville. I can hit if needed.
Nah, we're good, we're good. We're coming up to a dead end coming up. Just give us a space. He's probably going to 10:50 in a bit. No traffic, let's go. No traffic. He's going to lose control on his own. They're giving him some space.
As you can see, the scout throwing the log.
Traffic accidents is used for, you know, crime scene investigations and, of course, tactical operations along the border. As you can see those photos, it shows results or good overwatch snapshots of pictures because of the drones. As you can see, you have a drone walking in an operator to arrest a suspect. It's total darkness. These drones have daytime, nighttime capability, they can zoom in, so it's an officer safety tool at its best, and a lot of uses. And the first drone there cost about $30,000, so they're expensive but very, very helpful. Right here is a snapshot of the last 30 days in Del Rio and Rio Grande City, in the areas we're working, of the activity we're seeing on a daily basis. As you can see, the SOG operator that rescued an infant, a six-month-old infant, but that's what we're seeing daily, my folks on. This is a snapshot of the weapons, the marijuana, the cocaine, the narcotics, the guns, the gang members that our folks are coming across on Operation Lone Star. From March 4th to April 22nd, the last numbers are criminal arrests, we're showing 684. 5,000 pounds of marijuana, over $1 million in currency, and over 26,000 referrals, migrant referrals referred to U.S. Border Patrol that our state policemen are coming across in their everyday patrols in the area of operation. So, officer safety videos. So, Victor and his team, they're grabbing information from our partners, from the intel we're getting from the troopers, the CID agents on the ground, and he's getting that information and see how we can play, what category does it fit into. We're always looking for officer safety material, and social media is a big one. So So the crooks, the smugglers, are using social media to brag a little bit of what they're doing, and we exploit that.
And here's some examples. This is in Alice, Texas, about 2 hours from the Rio Grande Valley during that the ice storm we got in Texas. They got about six vehicles across loaded with people.
150.
This next video is in Hebronville, 2 hours in the Rio Grande Valley. What's interesting here, you have the smugglers using assault-type rifles to move their the migrants.
Córrele, güey, córrele, córrele.
Recruitment. Normally, the cartel, the smugglers, they will utilize the circles within circles of trust to hire drivers, to hire movers, whatever. They normally go within their world. But lately, they've been going outside and using social media to recruit drivers. So that's a good red flag or impact of what we're doing. We're making it difficult for them to find drivers, and they got to go outside the area. They're going into San Antonio, Houston, the big cities here in Texas to recruit drivers. TikTok, social media. Drawbridge. So we're also utilizing drawbridge cameras for this operation. We've been using drawbridge cameras since 2010. And what drawbridge camera is, it's a high-end game camera. I mean, you see them at your hunting lease to track down deer and whatnot. It's a high-end game camera that uses cellular activity or technology to communicate these images back to the ground, to Border Patrol, to us. As you can see, the picture is taken. It's got men with bundles, migrants walking, and there's two there with weapons that are in the Rio Grande City area, and which is it's a good image because the officer, when he's approaching, he knows exactly what he's dealing with. So basically, right now we have over 4,900 cameras deployed from El Paso down to Brownsville. And we communicate, so DPS has the asset. We provide the asset, and our biggest customer is U.S. Border Patrol. So they know where to deploy them strategically, depending on the information and intelligence they're gathering. Images of gang members coming across, drawbridge capturing those images along the border. This picture was taken recently. You see a man with a gun pointing at the driver. This is a turnaround. That's the river. The other side is Mexico. So drawbridge camera captured this activity. Very good information, very good intel for us. What areas are moving, and what are we seeing out in the brush? This is just a lot more eyes for us along the brush. There's so much territory to cover. So asset lay down. This is what we're struggling every day, analyzing every day to try to maintain this picture. So along the river, you have the TMU boats. You have the Border Patrol boats. We're communicating, collaborating on the areas that we need to be. On the shoreline of the Rio Grande River, you have game cameras, DPS game cameras, and also to include seismic sensors, which belong to U.S. Border Patrol. That captures weight on the ground. But you don't know what you're dealing with. It could be a cow, it could be a goat, it could be a dog, who knows? But the camera and the seismic sensors working together tell you exactly what you got. So we're always trying to maintain that picture. Then you go into the brush. You got operators, you got border patrolmen working the brush. And then you get on the highway. You got troopers, you got border patrolmen, you got deputies, you got police officers. Then, of course, you have National Guardsmen that are also deployed in areas of interest along the river, and they are our eyes and ears of what's occurring in certain areas. And we're constantly moving them around depending on what's occurring. Then, of course, you have helicopters, and you have fixed wing drones, most recently. So you have a layered approach. That right there is what we strive to do all the time, is find that picture. And that makes it very difficult for the smuggler to come across. It frustrates him. And again, Operation Lone Star, as you can see, it's a partnership. We've got to work with Border Patrol, our sheriff's department, our police department, our DA's office, in always trying to find what are their gaps, what are our gaps, sharing that information, intelligence, grabbing it. That is so important on figuring out where do we got to be and having a good partnership. That's all I have. Thank you so much. Y'all have any questions for me or Victor?
Yeah, I have a question and a comment. My question, first of all, need to project better. My question is, what sort of coordination do we have with the federal border agents between DPS and the federal authorities on our border operations?
So myself and my level, I'm always communicating with the chiefs at the trooper level, at the CID, at the DPS agents, our board type, our tactical operators. We're always meeting and working together. We're doing operations together. So we have partners that work in the brush together. So there's a constant communication. There's been a collaboration there for many years, working the border operations. So it's been solidified, and it's just ongoing. When we have meetings, they're always there.
It does, and I wanted to thank you, Victor, both Victors, for the time you spent with Commissioner Wainwright and myself earlier this week. It was just an outstanding presentation. I just can't tell you how impressed I was by your troops on the border. Their level of competency and professionalism was just outstanding. And on behalf of Commissioner Wainwright, we want to thank y'all for all the time you spent with us this week.
And thank you so much for that comment. You know, the folks on the ground, the troopers, the ICT, CI, man, they make it happen. And because of them, we have a great partnership with all the other agencies, and we're able to do this and be effective and create an effective policing model in South Texas. We're in RGC as well as W.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Director, are you legislative update for us?
Obviously,
Chairman, Commissioners, there's many moving parts, and of course, it changes every day. I would like to say that at least I had an opportunity to brief the Senate Finance Committee. This seemed like it was week. It was this week. Yes, it was this week. This week. It all blends together. And it's I was listening to them, the discussion. It's remarkable when you compare it to the national discussion. And we've got a governor, lieutenant governor, and a state legislature. While other legislative bodies are looking to defund police, they're looking to protect police and finding ways to better protect our patrol officers and recognizing that, hey, they're vulnerable out there. And the world has changed. They're targets. And what can they do? And by providing, you know, additional funds to the Department of Public Safety for perhaps bullet-resistant glass, something that the chair. And it was ubiquitous across the board. We're getting the same type of inquiries from the House. It's just that our members care about police and policing, and they care about the men and women of the Department of Public Safety. And it's just kind of humbling to be there to listen to that with all the rancor and all the misinformation and all this false narrative that law enforcement is focused at. When it's the nature of people, it's our human nature to seek and find evidence that supports our position or our conclusions and to discount or ignore other evidence to that fact. And there's too often there's cherry picking of data, and it's driven by episodes or incidents and not the raw data. That on a day-to-day basis, the men and women, not just in the Department of Public Safety, clearly Rangers and Texas Rangers and special agents and certainly our state troopers risk their lives, and they're honored to do so. and recognize that. But it's also other law enforcement agencies as well around the country. And in rare instance, you know, we had a, for an example, we looked at the numbers just going back 3 years, including, you know, to 2019. So if you look at the numbers over 3 years, it's really 2.5 years or less than 2.5 years. I mean, Department of Public Safety troopers, Special Agent Texas Rangers, they've stopped over, made troopers made over 5 million traffic stops. And there's been, between the three different branches of the department, there's been over 125,000 arrests. And there's been, some of those arrests are done tactically against, you know, high-risk situations where you would expect in terms of the need to use a level of force and always preferably not deadly force. But all of all those situations, the number of times that we've had to apply deadly force that ended up shooting and fatally killing somebody or seriously wounding somebody or wounding anybody in that regard was 36 times during that period of time. That's 0.00007%. And I can't even do the fractions on that. It's been a while, but that's a real small number. And it overwhelmingly, and just like when Trooper Chad Walker, he didn't show up to harass or harangue. It was just like, you know, he showed up to provide assistance, to public assistance, because to a disabled vehicle when he was shot by a coward. That's the type of things our people do. So this thank God that we're in Texas, I'll put it that way, and not in Washington, D.C., and that we deal with the state legislature and not with Congress. Okay, so that's as political as I'll get. With that, I'll turn it over to Deputy Director and Colonel Freeman Martin. Would you like any add to?
I would say, and Chief Cooper is here also. There were 8,499 bills filed, and we're actively tracking 1,178 of those. So it's hard to pick out, you know, particular legislation to talk about because there's so many. But I can't compliment enough Chief Jessica Ballou, Susie Whittington, and all the divisions that are not only keeping up with the bill analysis and tracking these bills, but providing resource witness testimony, expert testimony, and meeting with members to get amendments to make some of these bills workable. It's an everyday process. There's a lot going on, but we have a lot of experts in this department that it's amazing that the members reach out to them and want them to come provide, you know, expert testimony on their bills and how they would affect the state. But of that, the most important legislation that I would mention is the Senate confirmations for our new commissioners, Stephen Stachio on March 31st, Nelda Blair on April 8th, and then Dale Wainwright on May 28th, all 31-0 confirmations in the Senate. So that's all I...
On May 28th?
April 28th.
April 28th. It was March 31st for Stephen Sodshill, Nelda Blair, April 8th, and Dale Wainwright was April 28th.
Okay. So three of us got through. Congratulations.
Chief Cooper, did you have anything to add on the legislative session update? That's all I have.
I was going to tell you, Director, Chairman Cindy Leon shared with me a memo that she had. She was going through some papers and found a memo from 2011 asking then Governor Perry's office about a fence for the DPS headquarters. So
I've been very successful with that.
I think it reminded me of being a failure.
Well, we thought you'd be amused with that. So. Do you have anything else to add?
No, Chairman, that concludes my remarks, Director's remarks.
Very good. Any more questions for the Director before we move on? Okay, before we do move on, I want to recognize Suzanne McCobiak from the Lieutenant Governor's Office. She's on the call now, listening. I appreciate her being here. And we will now move on to new business. Item 8 on the agenda, report discussion and possible action on health, physical fitness, and command presence policy. That'll be Director Freeman Martin.
Chairman, Commissioners, all this does is amends the physical fitness and testing command presence policy implementation schedule. This was amended in the fall and push back 6 months. Well, we're in the May will be the last month of the spring testing cycle. All this would do was push it back 6 months, the implementation schedule that was previously adopted, and the updated schedule is in your binder.
And that'll disappoint a lot of people, I can assure you, but that they'll have to postpone the fit test, but I'm sure they'll get over it if with your approval.
And this was a lot of discussion on this because things are starting to open up. We're in the last month. If we tested now, that would put us right up against the next schedule, the next cycle that would throw us out of balance in addition to the legislative session, the recruit school that we have ongoing, and then the border deployments. So some of the regions, you know, 450 so troopers are down to a little over 100, which, you know, creates issues with the testers and the physical fitness instructors on top of the pandemic and the numbers. So this would put us, we feel confident that in the fall, there should be no reason with the vaccinations and the recruit class and our testers being freed up to mandatory testing in the fall, then again in the spring, and then come to you with complete data in the summer for the consequences for not being in compliance with the physical fitness and the command presence.
Any questions? Does this require an action on our part, or is this your policy?
Certainly a recommendation. I mean, that's refer to the general counsel.
I would vote on it because this is actually statutorily the commission approves the physical fitness plan, and y'all approved it in the first place, and you put the implementation plan in place. So any amendment to it, I would bring to the commission formally for a vote.
So the motion would be something to the effect of approving the amended schedule for testing?
Exactly.
But that amended schedule isn't an amendment to the policy, actually, except for this one time, right?
That's right.
I'll move.
I'll second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Blair, a second from Commissioner Wainwright to adjust the schedule as described by Director Martin to the physical fitness and command presence policy testing schedule. Is there any further discussion? And I would just say, I think extending it further out is not controversial. It would be shortening that would be what would be controversial. So I think most people would find this to be a welcome change. So if there's no further discussion, I'll call for a vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you. Item B under new business report.
Chairman, excuse me, if you don't mind, Chairman, I should have added this, but you know, Colonel Martin reminded me of this, is that, of course, I mean, as you know, the Department of Public Safety is a threat-based agency, and we prioritize based upon threat, and there's many different threats that the state faces, and we have to be agile within our regions and across regions, and of course, certainly the Capitol is the target that it was and continues to be, and you know, we've activated and we've rotated a number of troops and moving to 12-hour shifts, 24 and 7 around, to be able to proactively protect the Capitol from those threats. And they've done a tremendous job, as you would expect. And of course, that they come from somewhere, and they go back to somewhere. And of course, at the same time, we've got this unique situation with this historic influx of unaccompanied children and family units that have overwhelmed Border Patrol, providing the cartels both cash and opportunities to exploit between the ports of entry, as Director Escalon, you know, so eloquently articulated and demonstrated. And we're at that point right now, and he's been able to work and move to 12-hour shifts and 24 and 7, all the things that it is needed to be on the river, to be, you know, in the air, to be on the ground 24 and 7 in the hot spots. But now we're at that point where, and at the governor's direction, is that we need to do more based upon the threat. And as a result, we're going to be increasing the intensity. And that to increase the intensity, we'll be having additional resources will be coming from outside those regions. So Colonel Prince has already worked with the regional directors and certainly the, you know, those division chiefs on a plan. It's already being implemented right now in terms of it. We won't say how many DPS officers are going or where they're going because the cartels are obviously very interested in that aspect of it. But rest assured, they won't like it, okay? which is, we don't, you know, which is fine for us. They don't like us. We don't like them. And we'll be providing more resources. And frankly, that's one of the great things and Forsett honors to be within the Department of Public Safety is the complaints we usually get is, why can't I go too? All right. That's a different, not that I have to deploy, but why do I have to wait to deploy? They want to be part of something in terms of protecting Texans, and they want to be at the place where it's the highest priority of the state. So we're blessed with that type of attitude going into it, and it's a further reason, as Colonel Martin noted, for the postponement or of the fit test because of all we're everywhere at once right now, and we will continue to surge as necessary and working with our local, state, and federal partners, but also National Guard forces in terms that the governor's authorized as well. So with that, I conclude my remarks again. So.
Thank you, Director. Continuing with new business, item B, report discussion and possible action on the use of state seized funds. Chief Tom Rocco.
Last summer when I brought the internal operating budget to you that you approved, at that time I didn't have a good estimate for how much we would have in state seized.
Thank you. I didn't have a good estimate for how much we would have in state seized funds to spend. These funds expire at the end of August, so we want to use them. They can only be used for law enforcement equipment. At the end of March, we had just over $1.6 million in those funds, and our leadership has recommended that we spend those funds on some handheld guns for the state troopers that are the same guns that the CID agents have and that the Rangers have. They're just smaller, easier to handle.
I just want to add that, first of all, that these are the off-duty weapons. The Highway Patrol is not supplied with off-duty weapons. It just have the big sidearm. This would give them that. It would also be consistent with the goal of the department, where it would protect Texans, you know, from public safety threats. And also, it complies with the criminal code, which allows for the disposition of seized funds to be used for law enforcement purposes. In order to supply this, it would be approximately $1.3 million.
For every off-duty trooper?
For every trooper. It would provide them the weapon, the magazines, and the holster.
It's just a slightly smaller sidearm?
It's a lot smaller. Okay. It would be concealable, whereas the weapons now are not concealable.
Yeah. Chief raises a great point. I mean, we require troopers to be armed 24/7. You never know when you're going to need an active shooter situation engaged. They must. But at the same time, the service weapon versus the smaller version, which has 13 rounds to begin with, which is quite capable, is a far better tool for our troopers. And we, of course, our troopers deserve, you know, the best. And I know you insist on them having the best. And frankly, providing them this capability is long overdue. I'd like to take credit for the idea because it's brilliant. But it was actually Colonel Prince is the one that came with me with the idea. So it was somewhere in the chain of command, and Colonel Prince came with the recommendations, and it's now my idea and recommendation to you and the commission. So with that, that's the background around it.
And to be clear, these are sidearms that are already carried by Texas Rangers and CID off-duty?
Yes. It's a newer version. CID has a small compact called the 6-hour PT 320. Mm-hmm. 6-hour replaced that with this 365, which is a smaller weapon, and that's the weapon we're talking about.
And y'all did all the usual testing and all that?
It's been completely tested by our education, by the firearms division and everything else. And I believe it's also under our contracts already.
Any questions, comments?
Just a quick question, Mr. Chairman. So it sounds like this is not only good policy, it's smart, and it also complies with the law on use of forfeited cash.
That's correct. Chapter 59. Yes.
I think it's a wonderful idea.
I'll make the motion.
And I'll second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Blair and a second from Commissioner Wainwright to approve the expenditure of $1.3 million or thereabouts on the purchase of off-duty firearms for our Texas state troopers.
Yes.
Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll continue to get these funds every month as through the end of the fiscal year, so we may be back next meeting with some additional funds because they will expire at the end of August and we don't want to just let them, you know, get lapsed.
Thank you. Item C under new business, report, discuss, and possible action regarding appointment of a member of the Texas Private Security Advisory Committee as required by the Texas Occupations Code, section 1702.021, and that'll be Chief Wayne Muller.
Chairman, Commissioners, good morning. Wayne Muller, Regulatory Services Division. As you may recall from your last commission meeting, two of the seats on the Private Security Advisory Committee expired as of January 31st of this year. At that commission meeting, this body reappointed Ms. Patty James as chair and representative for private investigators in that industry. At that time, I also noted that the locksmith seat remained vacant because the individual who had served in that position had elected to not continue. Today, I do have a name for your consideration to serve in that locksmith representation spot for the Private Security Advisory Committee. Mr. John Helwig currently holds a private security and security alarm licenses through the private security program. He does this via his involvement with Atlas Alarms LLC, which is in the Houston area. Mr. Helwig is employed as vice president of that company, and it's my understanding that that company was founded by his father back in the 1950s, and he and his father are co-owners of that company. And so Mr. Helwig has been involved with the private security industry essentially his entire life. Mr. Helwig is past president of the Texas Locksmith Association and is current president of the Texas Burglar and Fire Alarm Association. That second one, he will resign that position if he is appointed to the Private Security Advisory Committee, as that would be required by statute. Mr. Helwig comes with a strong recommendation from Ms. Deborah Ulmer, who is a current member of the Private Security Advisory Committee and previously of the Private Security Board, as that used to be constituted. She sits in the burglar alarm representation seat. And since Mr. Helwig is involved with locksmith and also burglar alarm, security alarm programs, she and Mr. Helwig have worked together, known each other for many years. She states to us that his dedication and passion to the program, as evidenced by his presidencies of those associations, is strong, and she believes he would be a very strong asset to the Private Security Advisory Committee. We did conduct an investigation, a background investigation on Mr. Helwig, and there was nothing that would indicate any concerns whatsoever with his participation in the committee. And so at this time, I would recommend for your consideration appointment of Mr. John Helwig to the Private Security Advisory Committee to serve in the capacity as locksmith representative for a term that would run until January 31st of 2027.
And you didn't mention he's an Eagle Scout. So,
yes, ma'am, that is correct.
I'll make the motion.
Second. We have a motion from Commissioner Blair and a second from Commissioner Stodgill to appoint Mr. John Helwig of Houston, Texas, as the locksmith representative on the Texas Private Security Advisory Committee for a term to expire January 31st of 2027. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. And I just want to take the opportunity to thank the members of the Texas Private Security Advisory Committee. Very important work that they do, and we appreciate their service to the state.
Yes, sir. I'll make sure they're aware. Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on to item D under new business. Final determination in contested cases, consideration and possible action on proposals for decision. SOA docket number 405-20-417.MVI in the case of Felipe Della Mora and Proactive Car Care. General Counsel Adkins.
Good morning. We have two contested cases this morning, one from the Vehicle Inspection Program and one from the Private Security Program. both of the first case, the department suspended Felipe De La Mora's vehicle inspection certificate and proactive car care station certificate because De La Mora issued a passing vehicle inspection report after clean scanning vehicles. A hearing was heard before the State Office of Administrative Hearings, and the administrative law judge recommended in its proposal for decision adopting the 12-month suspension that the department recommended. In the other case, it is a private security case regarding Brandon Allen Howard. The department denied Mr. Howard's application for a commissioned security guard license because of a conviction for a felony offense. He is disqualified from possession of a weapon under federal law based upon that conviction. And so the application was denied. Again, a SOA hearing was held, and we're asking you to adopt the proposal for decision from SOA in both of these cases on the agenda this morning.
I would entertain a motion on that.
Mr. Chairman, I so move.
Second.
A motion from Commissioner Wainwright and a second from Commissioner Stodgill to adopt proposals for decision on items 1 and 2 under D New Business, SOA docket number 405-20-4157.mbi in the case of Felipe De La Mora and Proactive Car Care, and item 2, SOA docket number 405-21-0085.psb in the case of Brandon Allen Howard. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes unanimously. Moving on, thank you, Phil. Moving on to item E under new business, the intelligence threat briefing. Clearance is required, and that will be handled in executive session. We'll now move on to ongoing business, item 9 under the agenda. And A under that report, discuss and possible action, possible adoption of the following previously published rules. The repeal of 37 TAC, well, I'll just, I won't read them out, but that'll be Chief Mimsy Dennis. Chief.
Good morning. I'm Mimsy Dennis, Assistant Chief of the Driver License Division. I'm here this morning to discuss the adoption of the previously published rules. These rules received no public comments, and the changes to the rules consolidated issuance requirements for minor drivers and removed restrictions related to online and alternative transactions. These changes also remove references under physical restrictions to moped and motor-driven cycle licenses, updates information related to exams offered by other entities, and provides updates to conform with current statute. As outlined in ongoing business items A1 through A5, we are formally requesting the adoption of rules that will repeal sections 1527, 1528, and 1539, replace 1527 and 1528, repeal and replace section 1557, add the proposed new section of 1564, and repeal sections 18.1 through 18.4.
I would entertain a motion on that.
Also move.
We have a motion from Commissioner Stodgill and a second from Commissioner Blair to approve the repeal of 37 TAC section 15.27, 15.28, and 15.39, the proposed replacement of 37 TAC section 15.27 and 15.28, the repeal of 37 TAC 15.57, proposed new 37 TAC 15.64, and the repeal of 37 TAC sections 18.1 through 18.4. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you. The report discussed and possible action regarding the modification of the DPS organizational structure and the appointment, promotion, ratification, employment, evaluation, reassignment duties, discipline, or dismissal of a member of the department or commission management team. Director McCraw, do you have any items for us?
No, sir, I do not.
Moving on to item C under new business. Report discussed and possible action regarding ongoing criminal investigations pursuant to Government Code Section 411.0041. That will be discussed in executive session. We'll now move on to item 10 on the agenda, reports. Do any of the commission members wish to give a report? Chief Whittington, do you have a finance report? Okay. Chief Melvin, I saw you earlier. Okay. Any division reports? Hearing none, we'll move on to item 11 on the agenda, which are the consent items. Director Prince, are there any amendments to the consent items?
No, sir. No amendments.
I would entertain a motion to approve all items in the consent items section of the agenda under 11.
I so move, Mr. Chairman.
We have a motion from Commissioner Wainwright and a second from Commissioner Blair to approve all items listed under Section 11, consent items on the agenda. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. The consent items are approved. Items for future agenda, commissioners, if you have items you would like to be included on future agendas, please let Sophie know. The date for the future meeting will be a discharge hearing scheduled for June 9th of 2021, and the regular Public Safety Commission meeting is scheduled for June 10th of 2021. Before we adjourn into executive session or go into executive session, I would just want to take the opportunity to congratulate my fellow commissioners on their confirmations. It's a wise decision by all involved. I've enjoyed working with you all, and I look forward to working with you as time moves forward. So congratulations. The Public Safety Commission will now go into closed session at this time pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act, Chapter 551, to consider matters authorized to be considered in executive session under Government Code Section 551.0710720730740076 and Government Code Section 411.0041. The time is 10:16 in the morning. The Public Safety Commission has ended a closed session and is now reconvened as a quorum in open session. The time is 1:52 p.m. If there is no further business, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
I so move, Mr. Chairman.
Second. We have a motion from Commissioner Wainwright and a second from Commissioner Blair to adjourn. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. We are adjourned. Thank you.